Oh. Both vehicles were undamaged, just standing motionless, and Artyom was standing in their crossed beams of light.
"Hey, don't fire!"
he called out to them in a squeaky voice. He put his hands up. "Take me prisoner, please." They couldn't give a damn what he was croaking about. They consulted soundlessly among themselves and refused to take him prisoner.
Who are you?
67, 68, 69. Suddenly the motorcycle darted away with a puff of blue petrol fumes and zoomed out of sight. Then the armored car did the same, doused its searchlights, reversed, swung round, and disappeared into the twilight. So you exist after all, eh, don't you? Or else what the fuck was that? In his joy and disbelief, he prodded the last poor bastard, the fourth one, with his boot. You didn't get lucky like that, eh? The man slumped and slid down the door. He had a bag with wires sticking out of it on his side. A mine. I could have punished you for that right now, he told Artyom. Don't rile me. Artyom apologized. But he didn't repent. He remembered something and frisked the dead man. Then he ran round the vestibule. Come on, before the guys in the armored car changed their minds. He tugged on all the doors again. At least one of them had to be open. And he found it, on the other side. He clambered inside and ran straight down the slippery steps before he squatted down to catch his breath. Only there did he start believing he wasn't about to die, that he wasn't going to die right now. The steps had led him to a chamber with turnstiles and a ticket office. There were two ways out. Down the empty, sagging escalator to Ochotny Riad station, and along a gallery to somewhere, to Teatralnaya station. Artyom's worst fear was that the Reds could have set up a patrol here and it would finish off what the guys in the off-roader had started. But the connecting passage wasn't guarded. Apparently they just locked the hermetic gates down below at the station and didn't even come up to the surface to avoid getting poisoned, just like back home at exhibition. Artyom took out the mine and looked at it. How could it be activated? The mine was as stupid and ugly as power. It was power granted to Artyom over a still uncounted number of people. What should he do with it? A jog along the corridor to the entrance of Teatralnaya station. Everything there was closed, blocked off and walled up too. But a door had been left so that stalkers could go up on top. Artyom squeezed into his gas mask and hammered on that door with all his manic strength. Someone took 5 minutes climbing up from below. Then they didn't want to open up and interrogated Artyom from behind the shutter. They didn't believe he was alone. Eventually they opened up a little crack for his ID, and Artyom thrust the passport he had confiscated from the dead man into it.
"Open up and quick! Open up, or I'll complain to the ambassador! Open up, I said, you hear? I almost got bumped off out here, an active service officer of the Reich. It'll be on your head. Open up, you bastard!"
They opened up, and they didn't even make him take off his gas mask to check his face against the passport. It's good to have an entire ogre's state behind you. It's good when you stride along and an iron legion marches in step with you. You can live with confidence. Artyom didn't let the sentries gather their wits, didn't let them inspect the knapsack. He grabbed the passport back and tumbled down the stairs. He just shouted to them over his shoulder that he had an important mission and lackeys like them didn't need to know any more about it. As soon as he reached the bottom, he turned a corner and hid in order to shed his skin like a snake, changing the green protective one for his own usual one. He tucked the rubber away somewhere temporarily but didn't abandon the radio set. In 40 minutes, he had to contact Dietmar. That meant he had 40 minutes here to find Pyotr Sergeyevich Umbach, the man who had heard on the airwaves that people had survived somewhere else too, and yank that man out of this station before the Reds, or the Browns, came bursting in. Artyom peeped out to see if they were chasing him. No, they weren't. They'd already forgotten about Artyom and gone back to their own business. They probably had more important business than arresting saboteurs. What could that be? And that was when he remembered what Teatralnaya station was all about. the small, cosy, low central hall of the station, with its ceiling quilted in rhomboids like a bedspread, was the auditorium of a theatre, almost completely filled with seats and also with tables, at the front, closer to the stage, hidden by the closed velvet curtains. The arches were also curtained off, only not with velvet, but with whatever could be found. The rectangles of the route indicators hanging from the ceiling glowed with dull, ineffectual light, but the list of stations had been replaced by a flamboyant inscription: "Welcome to the Bolshoi Theatre." The people here lived in metro trains, standing on both tracks. One had actually been standing at the station when all the electricity in the world was cut off, and another had just stuck its nose into the tunnel on its way to Novokuznetsk. It had all worked out pretty snugly, better than scaffolding above water, and better than social housing with hell on the other side of the wall. Although these trains didn't go anywhere and the view from their windows was always the same, either grey stone or straight into the ground, the locals led a light-hearted life. They laughed, joked, and pinched each other on the backside without taking offence, as if they were simply waiting in their carriages for the driver to apologise at any moment over the loudspeakers for the 20-year delay, and then the train would set off and, without getting lost anywhere, arrive at the next station, and also, of course, at the very day from which they had set out. The last day, before the end of the world. And in the meantime, they'd gotten the hang of living here. Grubby children were running around, all bright and quick-witted. They fought, using plastic insulation piping as swords, flung convoluted phrases torn out of some half-decayed plays at each other, battled to the death, giggling and squealing over a stolen cardboard stage prop painted with gouache. The people here, however many there were, all lived off the theatre. Some acted, some painted scenery, some fed the customers, some ushered out the drunks. Bespectacled women wandered the platforms, fanning themselves with swatches of tickets, touting them in cracked, trembling voices.
Today's performance, the final seats.
They walked over to the edge of the platform and glanced into the tunnel to Novokuznetsk. How many more fools would it bring them? But Artyom felt an urge to go to the other end and look in the opposite direction. At the other end, both tunnels led to Tver station, to the Reich. Somewhere there in the darkness, the columns in black uniforms had already been drawn up, ready to march, and were waiting. It would take them 15 minutes at a goof step, and if they flew in on a petrol-powered trolley, only two. After Artyom told Dietmar over the radio that everything was ready, 2 minutes would go by and the avant-garde assault units would be here. At the center of the hall, two stairways ran off in opposite directions, above the tracks. Both led to passages to Red Line stations, one to Okhotny Riad, to which the communists had given back its old name of Marks Prospekt, the other to Revolution Square, which used to be part of the Arbat-Pokrovsk line, but after the First War with Hansa, the Reds had traded Lenin Library for it. Both passages were fenced off with movable metal barriers. Standing behind each barrier were several Red Army men in washed-out green uniforms and an officer wearing a peaked cap. Their cap badges were enamel stars that age had turned raspberry red. They stood facing each other 10 paces apart, swapping jokes. But those 10 paces were the territory of a neutral station, over which they had no authority. And in addition, even up in the gallery, they were part of the audience of the Bolshoi Theatre. That was how Teatralnaya lived, squeezed between the Red Line's two neighbouring outposts and the Reich, between the hammer and the anvil. But somehow it had always managed to rebound from the blows of fate, spinning round and deceiving the cold iron, avoiding war and preserving its neutrality. It had managed to do that for a long time, until this very day. And seemingly only Artyom could sense the stormy electrical charge in the air today. The others didn't understand. They couldn't see the imminent and inexorable bloodbath. strolling along beside the stranded trains with their young ladies, railway officers on leave with swastikas on their sleeves, managed to pass quite amicably by faded green officers with raspberry red stars who had just been toasting the health of Comrade Moskvin, the General Secretary of the Communist Party of the Lenin Metropolitan, in the theatre buffet only one step away. They all had tickets jutting out of their breast pockets in the same way. All of them were getting ready to go to the show. Ah, no, not all of them. Some of them were getting ready to do something else. When the signal came, cut off the passages to Ochotny Riad and slit people's throats. In addition to the central passage, there were two others, one at the rear of the station, at the very end of the platform, and another up above, via the vestibule. It was difficult to block off all three instantaneously. Dietmar's idea was audacious. But Artyom's own goal was twice as difficult to achieve. Since that conversation beside the toilet, Dietmar hadn't left Artyom alone with Homer for a single second. The old man hadn't been able to tell him what the radio operator looked like, or what kind of work he did, or where he lived. So now, find him, Artyom. Whoever he is, wherever he is, and in half an hour.
"Excuse me."
He stuck his head into a compartment belonging to strangers.
"Does Pyotr Sergeyevich live here? Umbach?"
"Who? I've never heard of..."
"My mistake."
He butted into the next compartment.
"Pyotr Sergeyevich? Umbach? I'm his nephew. I'll call the guards, barging into people's homes. Tanya, are the spoons locked away? You know where you can stick those spoons, you stupid fool."
He walked past another two doors, looking back just in case.
"Pyotr Sergeyevich, do you know where I can find him?"
What?
"Umbach, Pyotr Sergeyevich, the technician, my uncle."
"Technician? Uncle? Eh?"
"A radio operator, I think. Does he live here?"
"I don't know any radio operator. There's Pyotr Sergeyevich, who works as an engineer in the theater with the stage. He, well, you know what I mean.
Can you tell me where to find him?"
"Look for him there. That's the place to ask."
"Well, the director's place. God almighty, why are you so thick-headed? Good luck to you. Bugger off. Can't do anything for themselves. Fuck it, these young people."
In the hall, the musician started tweedling away, warming up. Artyom darted towards the entrance, and the usherette almost bit him on the hand.
"I can't go letting everyone in for free. Nothing sacred any longer, you lout. This is the Bolshoi Theatre."
He had to run back and buy a ticket, paying with the cartridges that the dead men had lent him. As he bought it, he kept looking round. Somewhere here, somewhere among the promenading public, among the people who had come to the show from Novokuznetsk or wherever else, from all over the metro, there were two scattered groups of saboteurs. Somewhere there were bombers pretending to be theatre lovers. Perhaps somewhere there were even suicide bombers playing at being fathers of families, for instance, but already wearing explosive belts. When they got the signal that it was time to die for the Reich, they'd walk up, sweating, to the Red Line's border posts, and dash into the passages like bats out of hell. And 15 minutes later the assault teams of the Iron Legion would come bursting in from the two tunnels. He looked at his watch, and he realized that if he did everything on time, it would be right in the middle of the play. That wasn't Artyom's calculation. It was Dietmar's. So after Artyom had managed not to die up on the surface, everything was going precisely according to Dietmar's plan. But if Artyom didn't do anything, Homer would hang, and instead of the fascists, the Reds would enter Teatralnaya station, only tomorrow instead of today. It seemed like one man could change the world, but only just a little bit. The world was as heavy as a metro train. You couldn't really shift it too far. He dashed back to the female Cerberus at the gate and stuck the ticket in her teeth, and he tipped cartridges into her pocket, too. The cartridges made her glasses mist over, and through the mist she didn't see him sneak into the auditorium first, ahead of the rest of the audience. He walked briskly past the two Red Army posts without looking the soldiers in the eye so that they wouldn't remember him. Then he went up onto the stage and stuck his face in through the velvet. It was dark behind the curtain. In the shallow space of the stage he could just make out the form of some kind of gazebo, or perhaps a rather vaguely painted ancient temple. Artyom touched it. Plywood. He heard voices from behind the plywood, as if it was possible to enter it and live there.
"Well, believe me, I'd like to put on something different. You don't think I'm happy with our present repertoire, do you? But you have to understand that in our situation—"
"I don't want to understand anything, Arkady. I'm tired of all this balderdash. If there was another theater anywhere in the metro, in the world, I'd leave here without a second thought, and God knows I'm absolutely not in the mood to go on today."
"Don't say that.
What can I do? I wanted to stage Ionesco's Rhinoceros, a fine play in every way. And also, an important point, there are no costumes apart from a rhinoceros's head, and that can be made out of paper. And then I realized we couldn't do it. What's the play about, after all? It's about normal people turning into animals under the influence of ideology. How can we put on something like that? The Reich will think it's about them, and so will the Reds, and that will be it. A boycott at the very least, or something even worse. And then these people with rhinoceros' heads in the Reich, they'd be sure to see a parallel with the freaks. They'd think we were mocking their fear of mutations."
"Good God, Arkady, that's paranoia."
Artyom took a cautious step forward. Several small rooms appeared, a dressing room, a cubbyhole with stage props, and another one that was locked.
"Do you think I'm not searching for material? I search constantly, all the time. But take the classics. Hamlet, for instance. Open it, and what do you see there?"
"Me? The question is, what do you see?"
"The question is, what do our spectators from the Red Line see there? A neat little plot. Hamlet learns that his father was killed by his own brother. By Hamlet's uncle, that is. Doesn't that remind you of anything?"
They were arguing in the closed room, but in the cubbyhole beside it, an old man with grey hair and a droopy moustache was sitting hunched over a table and soldering something with his eyes watering from the smoke. This was more or less how Artyom had pictured the man called Umbach.
"I haven't got a clue.
How about the death of the previous general secretary of the line, in the prime of life? And how was he related to Moshvin? He was his first cousin. Only a blind idiot could fail to spot the hint. Is that what we want? Listen, Olga, we simply don't have any right to provoke them. That's all they're waiting for, them and the others."
Artyom stood in the opening of the cubbyhole where the man with the droopy moustache was sitting. The man sensed his presence and gave him an inquiring look.
"Pyotr Sergeyevich?"
Suddenly, he heard footsteps drumming fiercely and screeching as the steel tips of the boot scraped the floor, somewhere in the hall. Several men, not saying anything. Artyom hunkered down and turned one ear so that it could hear through the velvet.
"You're simply a coward, Arkasha."
"A coward? Any play is too risky for you. Whoever we take on, remind me, will you, why we can't even put on the pitiful seagull? The pitiful, absolutely innocent seagull? At least a decent role could be found for me in that."
"Because it was written by Chekhov. Chekhov, just like the cherry orchard."
"So what?"
"So it's Chekhov. Chekhov and not Wagner.
I'm absolutely certain that our neighbors from Wagner Station would think it was a swipe at them, that we had deliberately chosen Chekhov in order to spite them."
The footsteps scattered rapidly round the hall.
"Two of you watch the hall and four get up on the stage,"
someone whispered in Artyom's ear.
"The radio operator must be here."
Artyom pressed one finger to his lips imploringly, dropped to the floor, and half crept, half rolled away at random. And by a lucky chance he found a gap under the stage. They were looking for the radio operator. And for him. The sentries hadn't tried to catch him immediately. They'd reported to someone. The security police. If only the old man with the moustache didn't give him away. The two people arguing behind the closed door didn't hear the footsteps.
"And a streetcar named Desire? I could have played Stella.
The whole storyline in that is based on Blanche feeling ashamed of her appearance and hiding away in a dark room."
"I don't understand.
Haven't you heard about the Führer's wife?" "Idle gossip. My dear Olenka, now listen to me. People will come to see you, won't they? They have come. The tickets are sold out.
Can I give you a hug?
You coward! You lout! We put on a neutral show. Do you understand that? Neutral. A show that can't hurt anyone's feelings. Art shouldn't offend anyone. It's meant to console them. It's supposed to arouse the very best in them.
Artyom's arms had turned numb. His back was starting to hurt. Slowly and cautiously, he moved the wrist with his watch on it towards the slanting beam of light. He looked at the dial. In 10 minutes, he had to go on air, tell Dietmar the mine had been installed, and carry out his next order. The woman's voice jangled.
And what do you think I arouse in, then, eh?
I understand what you mean, but after all, in Swan Lake, the ballerinas used to go on stage with their legs naked.
Oh, if only we could put on Swan Lake, but we've been told quite clearly that the people regard Swan Lake as a hint at putches and coup d'etat. The situation is strained enough as it is. We mustn't irritate either side. And then, your pretty legs, those pretty legs of yours. You animal! You rhinoceros! Just tell me that you'll go on today. Tell me you will perform. The girls from the Corps de Ballet will be here any moment.
Are you screwing one of them? Have you been screwing Zinka?
My God, what stupid nonsense. I talked to her about art, and she... Why fritter away my time on pretty little whores when I'm in love with the prima? And why are you jabbering to me about art, eh, you lousy rhinoceros? Tell me the truth. You know how sick and tired I am of this neutrality, of the fact that art, blah, blah, blah. At this stage, I'd like the boss to get shafted by... Do you understand me? One or the other of them. Don't start that now. There's not enough time left. It could be the Reds, or it could be the Browns, but at least let it be one of them. I understand you. There's no need for that. Yes, there is. There's not enough time.
There was a hiss right above Artyom's ear, and someone clumsy shuffled his feet and grunted. Whoever it might be, and whoever he might have come for, he was standing right outside the closed door and eavesdropping intently. There were 6 minutes left to radio contact.
Yes, there is. Let it be one or the other of them. My God, whose idea was it that art should be independent? You're tickling my ear, Arkasha. Whose idea was it that an artist should go hungry, some idiot or other?
I agree. And, you know, I'd like more clarity, too. No ambiguity, a firm basis. That's what I'd like.
You understand me, then? Let them support us, but let them give us a firm set of rules. Let them appoint a censor, but let it be just one of them. Then, for instance, we could put on Streetcar and Seagull, or on the contrary, Hamlet and... Oh, yes, yes, a consolation, you understand. Art for us, you and me.
Shh! Like that.
A knock at the door.
Good evening, Arkady Pavlovich.
The voice was hoarse and low and strangely familiar to Artyom.
Who is it? Who's there?
My God.
Oh, and Olga Konstantinovna is there too. Will you open up?
Comrade Major, Gleb Ivanich, what brings you here? One moment. To what do we owe the honor? We were just making up Olga Konstantinovna here before the performance. I'm opening the door now.
Artyom could see through a crack. 4 pairs of steel-tipped high boots and a pair of low boots with laces. The door opened.
Oh, what's going on? Surely you don't have the right to be here with armed men, Gleb Ivanich. This is a neutral station. Naturally, we're always glad to see you as a guest, but what's going on?
In exceptional cases, and this is definitely an exceptional case, we received a warning message. There's a spy in hiding at this station. Here's the document. It's all official from the Committee of State Security. We know that he's an illegal radio contact with the enemy and planning an act of sabotage.
Artyom completely stopped breathing. For some reason it occurred to him that none of the stalkers who'd been shot on the surface had a radio with him. He had found a mine, but the radio set had disappeared.
Do you have anyone here who owns radio equipment?
Where are you going? Halt! Your documents!
A voice rumbled in the next room.
Hold him. Who's that in there?
One of our colleagues, a technician, Pyotr Sergeyevich.
Where are you going, Pyotr Sergeyevich?
There was a crash and a groan. The crack showed Umbach, flung down on his knees. One outstretched wing of his drooping moustache was pinned down by a lace-up boot. Artyom prayed that Umbach wouldn't look down into the darkness under the stage, that in his fear Umbach would forget to sell Artyom to the boots and buy his own life with the proceeds.
"Right then, lads. Take a look at what kind of junk he has heaped up in there."
That's professional equipment. I'm an engineer."
"We know who you are. We got a tip-off about you. Been planning terrorist attacks?"
"God forbid, I'm an engineer, a technician, in the theater."
"Take this mumbling idiot along. He'll go into Lubyanka."
"I protest!"
Arkady's determination gave his voice a squeaky note.
"Take him, take him. Come here, Arkady Pavlovich, just for a second."
The voices moved farther away across the stage, but the quietly hissed words were very clear.
"Listen, you piece of scum. Who's this you've been sheltering here? Do you think it would be any bother for us to grab you at the same time? You could take a ride to the far end of the Red Line, and no one here would ever miss you. And Olenka, your Olenka, touch her again and I'll cut your dick off, and your balls, myself, I know how, you fucking juvenile lead. Go screw your corps de ballet, and don't even dare look at Olga. Have you got that? Do you understand me, you shit?"
"I've
Say yes, sir, comrade major."
"Yes, sir, Gleb Ivanich."
"All right, go. Take a walk."
"Where to?"
"Anywhere you like. Move it."
The stage creaked above Artyom's head. Forlorn, lost footsteps. Arkady Pavlovich didn't know where to go. Then he jumped down onto the ground, swore, and shuffled away miserably. It turned quiet. They had already got Umbach to his feet and led him away, and the steel-tipped boots had all galloped out of Artyom's field of view. And what was more, he had missed the time to contact Dietmar. Another knock at the door. A different knock this time, crude and masterful, without any pretense.
"Olga?"
Gleb, I'm so glad..."
"I was standing outside the door, and she's glad, the bitch."
"Oh, Gleb, he blackmails me, doesn't give me any decent parts. First one thing, then another. He keeps me on a short leash and fobs me off with promises."
"Shut up. Come here."
They slurped loudly and lusciously, then pulled themselves apart with an audible effort.
"Right then. I'll come tonight. I've got executions this evening. We're going to top a few traitors. And after that business, I always fancy something sweet. So badly it sets my teeth on edge. Make sure you're here waiting for me, all right? And wearing a tutu."
"I understand, I'll be here."
"And make sure no one else is here. Not that Arkasha of yours or..."
"Of course, Gleb, of course. But what kind of traitors are they?"
"We caught a priest. He was preaching. And the others are defectors. The mushrooms on the line are all ruined. Some kind of plague, so the wimps have started running. They remember being bloated with hunger last year. Never mind, they won't run far. We'll top a few of them as an example, and the rest will soon settle down." "All right, as a woman, that's none of your concern. You just give yourself a good douching, and don't ask any questions. And don't forget the tutu."
"Yes, sir."
The major gave her a fruity slap on the backside, thundered across the stage with his heels, jumped down heavily onto the granite, and disappeared into nowhere, into the same abyss that had belched him out. Artyom went on lying there, watching. Would she cry? Would she have hysterics or a fit of convulsions? Would she call her Arkady back? She started singing.
"Toreador, en garde, allons, allons."
"Ladies and gentlemen, and now permit me to present to you the superstar of the Bolshoi Theater, Olga Heitzenberg."
Some kind of wind instrument struck a sad, beautiful note, and Olga Heitzenberg, with her long legs that were absolutely unsuited to life in the catacombs, walked out onto the stage and across to a pole. He couldn't see her face from backstage, only a shadowy outline in china ink. But even the shadow was incredible. She made her entry in a long dress, and the first thing she did before throwing her glorious legs round the pole was to take the dress off. Artyom laid out the segments of his aerial on the floor and arranged it to point towards where he imagined Tver Station ought to be. He pulled on the headphones and clicked the switch. He didn't have the time or the courage to go pushing his way through the jam-packed hall with the radio set on his shoulders, arguing with the sentries and crawling up the escalator. He just hoped the signal would reach Tver Darwin Station along the tunnel. Let it get there.
Come in. Come in.
There was a rustling, choking sound in his head, and then mercy was granted.
Oh, Stalker! And here we are already measuring up your old man for a necktie. You're late.
Cancel the operation. Come in. They're not planning to take Teatralnaya. Come in. They've got famine. On their line. They're putting up those checkpoints to catch defectors.
Dietmar made an indistinct sort of sound, either hawking something up or grunting.
Do you think you've just made me any wiser?
What?
Where's the mine, you cretin? Have you installed the mine?
Didn't you hear me? There isn't going to be any invasion of Teatralnaya.
What do you mean?
Now it became clear that Dietmar was laughing.
Of course there is. Most certainly there is.
Chapter 10 Red.
Hey, Paul, what do you want here?
Artyom looked at the man who had asked, a raspberry red star drifting in a blurred haze. He shrugged. Weary flagstaffs with faded red banners stood slanting crookedly beside the archways. The curves of the arches were cut off slightly above the height of a man by suspended signs, red line, state border.
Come on, move. That's enough staring.
The officer kept his eyes fixed on Artyom's hands. The Red Army men behind him waited for an order.
What do I want?
Artyom asked himself. No matter what, he mustn't do that. Put his hands up and take a step forward. He mustn't follow the unfortunate Umbach to that place where Pyotr Sergeyevich was about to have his guts wound onto a stick. He mustn't confess that he, and not Umbach, was the subversive radio operator they were searching for, because they wouldn't let him see Umbach in any case, and Artyom's guts would be next for the stick. Then what? Then forget Umbach and what he'd heard on the tubercular Moscow airwaves. Forget Homer, who was waiting for Artyom somewhere at Pushkin Station with a noose around his neck. Forget Dietmar and his little assignment. Forget the people who were sitting behind him right now and lapping up this garbage, who would soon be slaughtered with bayonets. Say goodbye to the little raspberry red star and stroll on to Novokuznetsk Station. And just let whatever happened behind him happen. He didn't have any eyes in his back. And what was there at Novokuznetsk? Nothing. The same thing as at exhibition. A void filled with stuffy air. Mushrooms. The miserable life that Artyom was supposed to drag out uncomplainingly until he croaked. Circle round, go back to Anya. Sometime, whenever, using someone else's dead documents. Someone else's documents. But the life would be his, Artyom's, the same old life, as black, twisted, and dry as a burnt-out match. Did he want that life? Could he hack it? Olga Eisenberg took off her bra. Without Pyotr Sergeyevich's hands to guide them, the orphaned spotlights picked her out ineptly, in blindingly harsh light, casting Olga's intense black silhouette onto the walls. The trumpet played too fast, and with nauseating insinuation, churning Artyom's guts, and the silhouetted woman on the pole flailed to its rhythm, swirling furiously as if she were impaled on a stake.
Are you deaf? Go on, push off!
And while Artyom was searching for Umbach, while he was on his way here with Homer, for a while he had forgotten, hadn't he, what it was like when you had nowhere to go. The old man had given him something, a direction at least. Forgive me, Grandad. How can I save you? Follow that fiend's orders? Help him set up a bloody massacre, and then what? Will they really let you go then? They won't, Grandad. So that's the choice, then. Whatever I choose, it's hopeless.
Right, search him.
Artyom's feet took a step back. His feet hadn't decided yet. The audience started turning round and shushing him. Someone relaxing in a railway man's uniform grabbed hold of Artyom. Was it Artyom he had really been waiting for while he watched with a bored air as the actress writhed on the stake? If they moved the other way, forward, there was no way back. His feet knew that. It was too soon for his body to die, but his soul simply couldn't stomach the idea of going back to the old life. No, I don't want her children, Artyom realized. He realized it quite simply, and for good. What was there at Exhibition Station? There was nothing. Or everything that Artyom had failed to become. And everything he would rather croak than become. Using his mind, he forced himself to raise his hands. One crept up a bit faster than the other. Sweat ran down his temples into his eyes in a caustic trickle with a raspberry red star swimming in it. Perhaps they haven't killed you yet, Pyotr Sergeyevich. Eh? I traveled halfway across the metro to find you, didn't I? And I got here, and there's nowhere for me to go on to. Come on now. They haven't killed you, have they?
I have some information.
What are you mumbling about?
Artyom sensed a spider's gaze from the audience, making his skin creep. So he said it again in the same quiet voice.
I have important information. About a planned armed coup. By the Reich, I want to talk with an officer of the state security services.
I can't hear you.
Artyom wiped away the sweat and took a step forward. The pedestrian passage to Ochotny Riad was long, interminably long, as if it had been built especially for Artyom to give him time to change his mind. From the outside, the border of the Red Line looked flimsy. A movable barrier and a couple of sleepy soldiers, but on the inside, where outsiders couldn't see, there were three layers of fortifications with sandbags, barbed wire, and machine guns. The gun barrels were staring at the walls, not inwards or outwards. They didn't know yet which direction the enemy would advance from. There were twin profiles stenciled in paint on the walls, two awfully similar, bald, scowling men with fat cheeks, like a blurred image embossed on a medal, one of them either protecting or eclipsing the other. The Moskvin cousins, Artyom knew that. The one in the foreground was Maxim, the present general secretary. The one Maxim had been stamped over was the previous general secretary, who had died. With every step away from Teatralnaya station, he heard the Bolshoi Theatre's perverse trumpet less and less clearly, because tearing along the passage from the opposite direction, from Mark's Prospect station, straight into his forehead, getting louder and louder, was the bracing polyphony of a bravura march generated by an entire military band. At the point where the second third of the passage began, the orchestral march collided with the languorous trumpet and drove it back out into the theatre. The place was lit miserably. There was only a mote of light along the barbed wire, and beyond that the gloom was as thick as jelly until the next strip of barbed wire. They didn't meet any live people along the way, only sullen soldiers. Artyom was straining at the leash, eager to resolve his fate. But his armed escorts had no intention of hurrying. Their own fates were too indefinite. He barely managed to hold out until Mark's Prospekt or Kotny Riad, until the very last border post, which looked just like the first one, so flimsy that a good hard puff would demolish it. Nothing else could be seen beyond it. The steps hid everything, and that made it seem as if no one here on the Red Line could give a damn for Teatralnaya. But the band was absolutely genuine. And it was standing right at the entrance, beside the border, tootling and jangling and drumming. It made Artyom want to straighten up and square his shoulders despite himself, and of course no trumpet or any other theatrical sounds could force their way through that. The station, as cozy, homey, and small as all of the earliest stations in the metro, was full of people who were all the same colour. It wasn't dirty here, and there wasn't any water running from the ceiling, and the lamps were lit. Everything decent and decorous, in short. But when the orchestra fell silent for a second to swap one march for another, the station's other voice could be heard. An unusual voice. Instead of the hubbub people are supposed to make, Okhotny Riad was filled with a constant rustling. People rustled as they glanced round in the winding queues, where each of them had a number written on his hand. In the entrances of the archways, people rustled papers at tables, performing some kind of bureaucratic function that Artyom didn't understand. The women rustled, and children rustled. And suddenly, while the drums and timpani were catching their breath, the station was no longer bright or clean enough. But then the orchestral conveyor belt started up again, and the merriment that it delivered changed the station back. The little lamps burned more brightly. The lips of people walking by stopped drooping, and the marble started gleaming. There were slogans to buoy up the mood, too, also stenciled in block letters. With the red line we will wipe out poverty, illiteracy, and capitalism. No to the plundering of the poor, yes to universal equality. Their oligarchs eat our children's mushrooms. A full ration for everyone. And Lenin, Stalin, Moskvin, Moskvin. A bald Lenin and moustached Stalin hung in gold frames on the end wall of the station. Standing beside them was a guard detail of pale little boys with little red rags round their necks, and there were flowers lying there, plastic ones. The locals didn't seem to notice that Artyom was under armed guard. All the people he strode past somehow found more interesting business to distract them. He wasn't able to meet anyone's eyes at all, but the moment he was past someone, the nape of his neck started burning as those scattered glances were immediately focused into intense beams by the lenses of their curiosity. He walked along, trying to reach an agreement with Pyotr Sergeyevich that he wouldn't die for a little while longer or go away anywhere, that he would wait until Artyom got there. No more than an hour had gone by, so there was still a chance. The Committee of State Security was located on the underside of the station. Below the floor that the monochrome citizens tramped across, there was another level with low ceilings that no one knew about, and the entrance to it was made to look like a cupboard, a place for sticking mops and buckets. Inside, however, everything was familiar, the same as everywhere else in the world. A corridor painted with linseed oil paint, green up to waist high and white above that, plasterwork turning brown from the damp, the eternal dangling light bulbs and a line of rooms. An escort unlocked one and shoved Artyom into it.
"I've got urgent business, something urgent to report."
"They report things in the army," he was told with a wink. "In this place you report people."
The iron bolt on the outside of the door clattered in his ears, scraping across his naked nerves. He looked at his cellmates, a woman with mascara eyes and a chemical yellow fringe of hair, with all the rest gathered into a little clump at the back of her head, and a morose, undersized man with white eyebrows and eyelashes and a hit-and-miss haircut. He had tough, tanned leather skin, like an alcoholic's. Umbach wasn't in the cell.
"Sit down," said the woman. "No point in standing."
The man blew his nose. Artyom eyed the bench and remained standing, as if that meant he wouldn't have to wait so long for them to see him, listen to his story, and agree to let the radio operator go as free as a bird.
"You think they're going to sort everything out straight away, right now, too, do you?"
the woman sighed.
"We've been stuck in here like this for more than 2 days now, and maybe that's good, the way they sort things out here. It would be better if they didn't bother."
"Shut up," the man groaned. "At least now keep your mouth shut, will you?"
"Did they bring an old guy in here before me?" Artyom asked her. "With a moustache, like this?" He demonstrated with his hands the feeble way that Umbach's moustache dangled.
No, they didn't. And there wasn't anyone without a moustache either. We're stuck here on our own, snapping at each other like that.
The man turned away to face the wall, and picked at it with his fingernail with an air of loathing.
And what have you done?
I haven't done anything. I've got to get the old guy out.
And what's the old guy done?
Artyom looked at her flesh-colored tights, scarred all over with darns, and her hands, blue blood flowing just under the surface of the skin, bursting it open. At first the black borders made her eyes seem large and passionate, as if she was giving herself for the last time, but in fact they were just ordinary. A wrinkly smile, with tired wrinkles. The old guy hasn't done anything either. We're from Teatralnaya, actually. We were just getting on with our lives.
And what's life like there? At Teatralnaya, lousy, I suppose?
She asked sympathetically. It's fine.
But they tell us here that you've almost eaten each other up already. Are they lying then?
Yolka, are you stupid or what?
The man appealed to her.
We have a good life here,
Yolka said, remembering.
Basically, we couldn't give a shit how things are at your place.
She paused and asked doubtfully,
Do you have to queue long for mushrooms?
What do you mean, queue?
Well, say you joined the back of the line, what number would you be?
What line? If you got money, you just buy them.
Money, you say? You mean coupons?
We don't need any money here, the man put in. If someone works, then he eats. Not like at that Teatralnaya of yours. Our working man has protection.
All right, said Artyom.
You go eat your money,
the man added.
Come on, Nadryusha, why attack him like that?
Yolka interceded.
They stick some fat-faced git in here and you want to show him your titties?
Andryusha hawked up and spat by his feet, but as if he was spitting at Artyom.
As if you suddenly needed my titties,
she smiled at the man.
I'm not a stooge, said Artyom, telling himself. I don't want to know anything,
said Andryusha.
It's none of my business.
They said nothing for a while. Artyom pressed his ear against the door. It was quiet. He looked at his watch. What was Dietmar up to? Did he still trust Artyom? And how much longer would he agree to trust him?
You mean there aren't any queues at all for mushrooms?
Yolka asked.
So how many do they give each person?
As many as he has the money for. The cartridges, Artyom explained, just to be sure.
Well, would you ever?
Yolka exclaimed in delight.
And what if two of you come together?
What?
Do you both get as many as you have money for?
Well, yes.
Greedy bastards, said Andryusha. Whose mushrooms do you think they're guzzling? Yours and mine. Our kids are bloated from hunger and they're pigging themselves.
They're not bloated,
Yolka exclaimed in fright.
And we haven't got any children.
I was being imagistic. Figural, that is, I was.
He stared at Artyom, with an air of anguish and a feeling of just having made an irreparable mistake, blushing bright crimson.
He didn't say that,
Yolka implored Artyom.
All right?
Artyom shrugged and nodded.
You watch your own tongue,
Andryusha barked at his wife.
You cunt! If you hadn't blabbed, we'd be at home. As if you didn't learn anything from the Yefimovs.
The Yefimovs didn't say anything, did they, Andryusha?
She whispered.
They took them away. They never said a single word against...
Then it must have been for something else. There must have been something,
he shouted in a whisper.
How could they just take them like that, without any rhyme or reason, and...
He hawked and spat.
And the whole family, too.
How's that? The whole family? Artyom asked.
It's nothing, none of your business.
What was it I said anyway? That there wouldn't be enough mushrooms this year. That the crop had failed in the state farm because of the plague, because of the white rot. We'll go hungry, and that was all. I didn't get it all out of my own head, but they said it was slander. Propaganda.
Who did you say it to, you stupid blabbermouth? Fetka Dementieva. That's who. Are you telling me you don't know about the Dementievs?
The Dementievs, Dasha works in the canning shop, and it's like she doesn't understand anything.
She stands there and keeps her mouth shut then. People get taken for less than that. What about Vasilieva?
The one who said, Lord have mercy, and crossed herself. And what did they take Igor from Section 105 for? During a break, he prattled about people from the outside, showing up at Cherkizovo station.
From where outside? And what happened?
From outside Moscow, from somewhere up on top, another city-like. And supposedly they came without protective suits. So what's wrong with that? What about it? It's obviously a lot of bullshit, like they picked up all those outsiders in a single sweep and the same day.
He ran his finger across his throat.
Don't show that on yourself,
Yulka exclaimed in fright.
Bullshit, right? Garbage, is it? The bastard youngs flattened everything for us. Even a little child knows there's only Moscow still standing. What other city? And the next day they snatched Igor Nuev. Yudin was listening and Yudin's another. You have to be a real wanker to talk in front of Yudin.
What city? Artyom asked, tensing up. What city did they come from? Those outsiders are Chekizovo. Andryusha said to him.
Like I'll just tell you.
Artyom pulled away from the door, took a step towards the man, and leaned down towards him.
But he said, didn't he? He said it, that Igor...
And look where it got him.
Tell me
it's important.
You haven't given them the dirt on the old guy yet.
You can't rake everything in.
Andryusha chuckled balefully.
You witless idiot.
Just tell me, where from? Artyom grabbed the man by the collar, wound the material onto his fists, and pressed him against the wall.
Get off him! Get off!
Yulka squealed.
He doesn't know anything, not a thing! Guards, help!
It's all garbage!
What if it isn't?
So what? So what if it isn't?
Then that's it. Then we can sling our hook. Get out of this metro.
Half hoisted up off the floor, Andryusha shook his head and pulled an ugly face.
If they're so well off up there, why would they come barging in on us?
Artyom filled his lungs to answer, but he couldn't think of anything to say.
Put me down! Put me down where I was standing, you louse, said Andryusha.
Artyom put him down. Then he turned away and went back to the door. He was about to press his forehead against it when it opened.
The one from Teatralnaya, out you come.
That was a mistake. You should have told me, Artyom told Andryusha.
Now you can ask them yourself.
Andryusha hawked up.
Here you are, Comrade Major. This is the subversive.
Where are his bracelets?
Let's have him in bracelets. The handcuffs clicked on.
That's just, when they confess themselves, they always have to wear bracelets.
The Comrade Major explained to Artyom, meeting him in the doorway.
Call me Gleb Ivanich. And who are you?
But Artyom already knew that this was Gleb Ivanich. He knew his hoarse, low voice and his lace-up, low boots.
Fyodor Kolesnikov.
The name in the dead man's passport.
Well, Fyodor, let's hear it.
Gleb Ivanich was stocky and hardy, a beef breed. His head was balding above its large forehead, his thick lips looked rouged. He was the same height as Artyom, so he wasn't very tall, but he was twice as broad and four times as powerful. His tunic wouldn't close on him. The collar was too tight for his bull neck, and his trousers were hummocky. Gleb Ivanich sat down at the desk and left Artyom standing there.
You picked up the wrong man.
What wrong man?
The major asked cautiously.
Umbach, a teatralnaya. He's not guilty of anything. You confused him with someone else.
And who should we have picked up?
Someone else.
And have you come to get him out?
The major was bored immediately.
He's no saboteur. He's a technician in the theater, Artyom told him.
Well, he confessed to being a saboteur.
Well, then, that isn't true. He slandered himself.
That's his problem. We've got everything signed off.
So now what? The room was spacious, but simple to the point of severity. The linoleum on the floor was curling up. The safe in the corner was a grey cube. Only the desk was luxurious, a trophy item. And there was a double profile on the wall. That was everything. Ah, but no, not everything. There was something ticking, too. Artyom looked round. Behind him, there was a clock hanging above the door, one that he'd seen not long ago in a completely different place. A simple clock, a piece of glass set in blue plastic. The dial had an image of a shield with a sword thrust into it and some letters in a line, all capital letters with hyphens. VCHK, NKVD, MGB, KGB. It was 10 minutes to 10.
In a hurry to get somewhere, Fyodor?
The major asked him and smiled.
Are you late?
That's an interesting clock.
A first-rate clock. And from this clock I gather that I have business waiting for me. Is that all you have to say, Fyodor? I'd like to carry on with you later.
I need to talk to him.
Ah, well, there's no way that can be arranged. Who is he to you? A relative? Or a colleague?
What does he confess to? He isn't a saboteur. He's never been in the Reich. It wasn't him you were looking for. It was someone else.
No, Fyodor. We were looking for him. Pyotr Sergeyevich. And the Reich hasn't got anything to do with it. Look.
The major waved a thick piece of paper.
The briefing material. From Central Office. Central Office can't be wrong.
So it wasn't Artyom that they'd come for. So Umbach himself was to blame.
Is that all?
Gleb Ivanich got up.
I've an appointment at 10.
He leaned down to the safe, fiddled with something, and the door creaked. He took out a dull, scratched, greyish-black revolver. And then Artyom remembered exactly what kind of appointment Gleb Ivanich had.
And what will happen to him now, to Pyotr Sergeyevich?
Artyom asked with a dry throat.
It's the supreme penalty for him,
the major pronounced.
All right, Fyodor. Wait until tomorrow. We'll talk tomorrow. I have a feeling it will be quite a long talk. You want to tell me something, but you're hemming and hawing. I've got to speed you up somehow, but as luck would have it, time's too short today. Business to deal with.
He rummaged in the safe, took out a handful of little brass plugs and tipped them onto the desk. He swung open the cylinder of the revolver and started stuffing it with blunt-nosed death. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there were more left on the desk.
You mustn't shoot him,
Artyom shouted.
Umbach! Why?
He has information. He's a radio operator and he knows something.
Everything he knows we know too,
the major reassured him.
He can't have any secrets from us. That's it, go and get some sleep. There are people waiting for me.
Gleb Ivanich scratched and stroked himself on his taut fly and stretched sweetly.
But you have no idea. He has information, valuable information. He...
Artyom bit his lip and weighed things up one last time.
He found survivors. He contacted them. Other people, do you understand? Other survivors, not in Moscow.
He glanced into the Major's broad, flat face. Nothing changed in it, and nothing moved.
That's bullshit.
Then the shadow of a smile flitted across his lips. Gleb Ivanich straightened his hair with his hand, with a dreamy air. He was waiting, waiting for the evening, waiting for 10 o'clock, and waiting for what would come afterwards. The date he had made with his little bitch in a tutu. That was what he wanted to think about. Artyom flung up his shackled hands.
But what if there are places where it's possible to live? If we don't have to, we're not forced to stay here in the metro. Until the end, eh? And he might know about it.
The Major weighed the revolver in his hand, squeezed one eye shut and peered at the table through the sight.
That's quality for you, he said pensively. They were executing people with this gun 100 years ago. But even so, there's no machine more reliable than a gun. Especially for this business. It won't jam or get overheated.
Aren't you listening to me then?
Artyom flew into a fury.
Or do you know something? Okay, that's enough. Escort?
No, it isn't enough. If you shoot him now, we'll never know anything. Never.
Escort.
Fuck it.
The Major barked.
Never. He's the only one, do you understand that? No one else has managed to do it, to find them and contact them. You mustn't kill him.
So I mustn't?
No.
Valuable information.
Yes.
Survivors.
Yes, survivors.
All right, let's go.
The Major grabbed Artyom's shoulder in the hydraulic press of his massive hand, kicked the door open, and led him out into the corridor. A guard came running up, guilty and frightened, taking a last drag on a roll-up. But the Major just shoved the burnished gun barrel in his face and pushed him away. He pulled a bundle of keys out of his pocket and jangled them at a door. Then he scraped it open and pushed Artyom into the cell.
Umbach!
Here.
Pyotr Sergeyevich, with the droopy moustache, got up with an anxious, searching look in his eyes. He was smeared all over with something reddish-brown that was drying out. The bridge of his nose was split open and his mouth was gap-toothed. He was holding his head thrown back a little so that his nose wouldn't run. Patches of shadow and light flickered across his face by turns. What should he expect? The Major raised the revolver to his forehead, and the crash immediately smashed into Artyom's ears, slamming into them like a sledgehammer, and a fine red mist spattered in all directions, settling on the Major's hand and face and uniform tunic. Umbach went limp and sat down on the floor, turning into a sack of sand. Pale-faced, the other prisoners covered their ears, and a woman started squealing. The wall was covered in scraps of something wet and gleaming. A jailer stuck his head into the cell and swore inaudibly, and then asked something, still speaking inaudibly. Artyom's ears were ringing painfully. The Major grabbed Artyom by the shoulder, dragging him out into the corridor and slammed the door. He growled through the ringing.
Who mustn't? I mustn't! Me, you little son of a bitch! I mustn't!
A sick, dizzy feeling. Artyom swallowed it down, held it inside. If he puked, it would be a sign of weakness.
Lead out the condemned prisoners, as many as possible,
the Major shouted to the jailers, his voice barely audible through that ringing.
How many are there?
There were 7, including Umbach.
Just right then, 1 cylinder will do it, and wash down the cell.
The Major took a step forward and stood right in front of Artyom's eyes.
Bring him with me,
he told the men, who came running up from the guardroom. They went back into the office.
You say I shouldn't, but I should. I should shoot you, and in public. An execution is a useful thing. Every damn bastard thinks he's playing the lead, and this is a movie shot about him. But there, just look at the way people turn into sacks of shit. Click, all done and dusted. Now you won't go getting above yourself like that.
He picked a cartridge not yet allocated to anyone up off the table, and stuck it under Artyom's nose.
Look, that's for you. I wanted to take care of you tomorrow without hurrying things, you and your raving nonsense. But you just go looking for trouble.
He jerked out the cylinder and rammed Artyom's own personal cartridge into it.
Put him with the rest.
No. Artyom shook his buzzing head. No.
Get out there.
Today. Right now. The Reich. He's going to Teatralnaya.
Get out there, you bastard.
Umbach. He's their agent. He was... I had to get him out of here. I'm a spy, too.
You're a blubbermouth.
Wait, wait. Everything I said about the radio operator was a lie. Don't kill me. Really, I swear. There are two groups there now, mining the passages. Gleb Ivanich finally turned towards him.
What for?
They're going to take Teatralnaya.
Are they now?
They've got assault brigade standing in the tunnels, at the ready, and two sabotage groups at Teatralnaya. In 5 minutes, they'll be there.
What did Umbach do? Why him?
He's a radio operator. He was supposed to receive the signal to start.
And you?
I'm attached to him, his liaison.
Who set the assignment? Who briefed you?
Dietmar.
We're acquainted?
The major was transfixed. The clock above Artyom's head kept counting. Tsik, tsik, tsik. Exactly the same kind of clock as the Hansa major had. Only the ending of the abbreviated history of the Cheka was different. Premature.
But you're here, aren't you? We have you, and we have Umbach, so they're still waiting. How long will they wait?
They were supposed to strike before the end of the performance. If we drag it out, they'll send someone to check, and they'll blow the place up anyway. Tsik,
tsik. The major's eyebrows knitted together. Do you know what the others look like, in the two groups?
I know the leaders.
Will you help?
Artyom nodded once with a stiff, rusty movement.
We won't be able to get the men together that fast, the major said out loud. We have to drag things out. We have to drag things out.
Artyom wanted to suggest something, but he was afraid. The major would do the opposite, wouldn't he? He had to think of it himself. Think, Major, think. Well? How about this information? Tell them the groups have already been neutralized.
How? There's no time.
Artyom wanted to squeeze his eyes shut, hide, screen off his inside so the Major wouldn't guess at his suggestion, his prayer. But he made himself keep his eyes wide open as if he was inviting Gleb Ivanich into himself. And the Major clambered inside Artyom through his pupils, scraping through the corneas, smearing everything in there with fine spatters of Pyotr Sergeyevich.
Have you got a password or a response for radio communication?
He eventually decided to ask. Artyom tilted his head forward without saying anything. Then he cautiously raised it again. He was afraid of frightening off the Major's decision, the only one that would save Artyom.
Let's go.
They walked along the corridor, past the cell that was already unlocked, with the condemned prisoners standing there, staring at the floor and the walls, as if they were hastily trying to save their souls by hiding them in the joints of the tiles, under the turned-up edges of the linoleum, and went into a different room with the word communications on the door. An exhausted communications officer with a hare lip stood to attention. A desk with a phone, green boxes with switches and dials, headphones. The escort stopped in the doorway and Artyom was prodded to invite him to go over to the equipment. But before that, Gleb Ivanovich picked up the telephone receiver and jingled the buttons.
Hello, this is Svinolop. Yes, Svinolop. Get me Ansiferov.
Artyom did a double take. Now the identical clocks were linked by that idiotic and unusual name. A coincidence like that was impossible. It couldn't be a coincidence. The other one was Boris Ivanovich. This one was Gleb, with the same patronymic.
They didn't look much like each other, but even so he believed it straight away, fantastic as it was.
Yes, Comrade Colonel, I have an operative here who has confessed. He says the Reich is going to take Teatralnaya, right now.
The voice. Lying there under the stage, Artyom had recognized the voice, because the brothers had one voice between them. They spoke different words with this voice and put together different sentences, and they had different uniforms, and their clocks had stopped at different times. But even so, it was the same voice. Gleb was probably older. He looked older. So that meant Boris had risen faster through the ranks. How did he manage that? Artyom wondered for some reason, instead of wondering if the fine thread that he was planning to walk along over the abyss would snap. How did it happen that the two brothers ended up with the same rank on different sides of the front? Did they know about each other? They must. It was impossible for them not to. Were they at war? Did they hate each other? Try to kill each other? Were they playing games? What?
Do you give the go-ahead?
Yes, sir.
And then you'll just have time to send us reinforcements.
Yes, I agree. We didn't start it. And I also can't see any other.
Yes, sir. Accepted.
Artyom waited quietly, not even thinking any more about the noise of his thoughts scaring off the magical firebird of luck that had landed on his shoulder. It was one chance in a thousand.
What's the frequency?
The communications officer with the twisted face sat down at the radio set. Artyom told him the frequency. They started combing the airwaves. They sat the headphones crookedly on Artyom's head, covering one ear and leaving the other open on the side towards the other men.
"Do you run the aerials out onto the surface?" he asked. "How do you pick anything up here?"
"You think about your own job," Svinolup advised him. "Our job."
"But haven't you ever heard any other cities?"
As if he was being asked, the radio officer shook his head.
"There aren't any other cities, kid," said the major. "Forget it."
"But people came. People have come from other cities, haven't they? Come to the metro."
"Hogwash."
"And they were eliminated by your people."
"More hogwash."
"And anyone who blabbed about it..."
Gleb Ivanovich narrowed his eyes. He banged his gun against a metal box.
"No fucking point passing on a pack of lies. We're stuck here and that's it. Why get people all worked up? Let them dream about what they're told to dream about us defeating Hansa and putting all the bourgeois up against the wall, and then there'll be communism in the metro, and a full ration of mushrooms for everyone. Things will be good here, here, where we are. You have to love your homeland, got that? After all, there's no place like home."
"I was born up on the surface."
"But you'll die down here."